Hey guys, welcome to a new episode of Sauce of the Scary. Jeff and Derek back at you. Jeff, man, what's going on? How are you?
I'm doing okay, Derek. I am interested in what we're talking about today. Is kind of a bit of a swerve for us, although not outside of our lane if you've been listening to the podcast for a while. So get a chance to talk to my buddy about something interesting. I'm good to go with that.
I'm good, man. It's nice. This is the second day in a row that you and I have got to spend some time together. And I got to be honest with you, I'll be upset tomorrow when I don't get a Skype call from my buddy Jeff.
I'll leave you a long voicemail.
All right, cool. That's what I like to hear. So this week, as Jeff alluded to, we are going to kind of deviate a little bit. We're not going to review a horror movie, but we are going to be reviewing a documentary series that Jeff and I have talked about in the past, but that we both thought equated to real life horror and would be something that you guys might be interested in. And it's actually available on Hulu now, so it all kind of ties in together. It is the Dark Side of the Ring documentary series that is originally on Vice. Again, like I said, it's on Hulu now, and we're going to be talking about the season 2 episodes 1 and 2, which are entitled Benoit. And if that name sounds familiar to you outside of the pro wrestling world, it's because we're going to be talking today about the murder-suicide of professional wrestler Chris Benoit. But before we get into that bag of fun, let's have a little fun and go to everyone's favorite part of the show.
Jeff hates trailers.
And Jeff, I've got two for you today, my man. I meant to talk about this last week, and now I'm kind of glad I didn't, so that we've got some fodder to talk about this week. Speaking of Hulu, they have a new series coming out in 2 weeks. It premieres on Friday, October 16th. It's called Hellstrom. Oh. Have you heard anything about this?
Is it a comic book adaptation?
It is, although there's no Marvel logos or anything on this thing.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I'm familiar with the comic books.
Okay. So for those of you that aren't, let me give you the synopsis real quick. Damon and Anna Hellstrom are the son and daughter of a mysterious and powerful serial killer. The siblings have a complicated dynamic as they track down the terrorizing worst of humanity, each with their attitude and skills. And again, as Jeff said, this is based off of a Marvel comic series. But again, the Marvel logo does not appear anywhere in the marketing material for the series. So.
Mm. That's curious. I haven't read a Hellstrom. I mean, Hellstrom, I don't think, has had its own standalone series in a while, so I've not read anything Hellstrom related. But that set of characters tends to show up in supernatural stuff, you know, magic users and demonic stuff and whatnot in the comic book universe. So I'm surprised to hear it sounds like it's going for more of a Dexter kind of thing.
Yeah. But it does sound very, I mean, like I watched the trailer this morning and it is a very supernatural feel to it.
Okay.
It honestly, in the best ways possible, reminded me of Castle Rock, like that first season of Castle Rock. There's a very strong maternal figure in this. And I don't know anything about it. Matter of fact, that's the first time I've actually read the synopsis, was just reading it to you. So I'm curious. I don't know if this will be appointment viewing for me or not, but I think, you know, I've got Hulu and I have it for free. So I'll probably check it out. You know, if I continue to have these like dark days where I'm off on Mondays and Tuesdays and I've got a little time to kill, I'll probably check out. I don't know how they're going to do the episodes. There's going to be 10 of them. And it looks like they're all going to drop on Friday, October 16th. So might be something cool if you're looking for a little supernatural sci-fi horror. Might be something cool to check out during the month of October.
Yeah, well, that definitely fits me. To the surprise of no one, as a comic book geek, I enjoy the stuff that's done, you know, in the supernatural arena. And I'm always up for another version of it. We've talked about it in the past, not recently, but I loved the DC streaming services Swamp Thing, and it just killed me when that thing got canceled over basically tax issues. I think, again, not to no surprise, to nobody's surprise at all, I think the genre of comic book kind of stuff lends itself very well to horror. You know, we've talked recently about my disappointments about the New Mutants movie. So more power to them, and I will definitely be there to check it out. The DC version of Constantine is a character I will always watch a new adaptation of. And so if we're going to get Marvel's version of that through Hellstrom, and particularly if it becomes like a supernatural knockoff or a Dexter knockoff, it's almost custom built for my interests.
Yeah, for sure.
I appreciate you putting that one on my radar, man. That's one I will check out pretty aggressively. Might be time to sign up for Hulu.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you, Hulu is, out of all the streaming platforms that I think I have, I think Hulu is my favorite.
Yeah, okay.
Not only because, you know, you can watch, since I don't have TV, like your regular standard cable television, it's just nice to be able to watch your favorite TV shows and stuff the day after.
Mm-hmm.
And then it also has, great original content like this. So I think it's definitely worth the money. And I don't know if they're still doing it or not. And I'm not telling you to switch your cellular account, but I know that I get it free through Sprint.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, so it's a nice little perk.
For sure.
Yeah. So that comes out in 2 weeks. Coming out this Friday is the last one I want to talk to you about. And I think that it's something that you and I will both maybe even want to review in the month of October.
Ooh.
It's a Netflix movie called Vampires Versus the Bronx.
Okay.
And a group of young friends from the Bronx fight to save their neighborhood from gentrification and vampires.
Hmm. Okay. I'm intrigued.
Yeah. And this reminded me of like Stranger Things, a group of preteens. That's Netflix's wheelhouse anyway, but also with vampires. And it looks, it doesn't look the greatest, but it looked cute and I thought it was pretty fun. And so I'm definitely going to check it out probably sometime this weekend if I get the chance. But yeah, it comes out this Friday.
Well, I still haven't reactivated Netflix, so yeah. I'm going to live on the island as long as I can. But I'm assuming I will get to that. I mean, they know how to hook me.
Yeah.
You give me good horror content in October. You give me some Mike Flanagan stuff. You'll just have my money whenever you want it.
Yeah, well, I think I told you, I think we said it on air too, that I had canceled Netflix and I was on the last day of my Netflix subscription and really got into the Last Dance documentary. And I watched it all last weekend. By the way, I've watched it again through this past week.
My man.
Dude, it's amazing. And I got to the very last episode and got up early on last Wednesday to finish it. And it said, you have to restart your subscription. And I went up. Oh, well, that's how you get me. And so I upped it again just for that. But I think after October, I'm going to go back to not having it anymore. I'll get through Bly Manor, get through the Halloween stuff. And then I'm going to, we talk about, and it's been well documented, the best way to protest a lot of things are by, where your money goes. And if I'm not paying for Netflix anymore, then that's my way of telling them that I'm not happy with some of the stuff that they've done.
Sure. And there's so many streaming platforms.
Mm-hmm.
Why put up with the nonsense? Like, I've been wanting to try HBO Max for a while.
Yeah.
It'll be very easy to kind of port that Netflix money right over.
Yeah. I'm telling you, man. So for me, HBO Max is probably the best one. I know I just said I like Hulu the best, but I think for the most bang for your buck, like for the ones I'm paying for,
yeah,
sure. HBO Max is probably my favorite. It's at the point where I only keep Amazon Prime just for the 2-day shipping.
Hmm.
I mean, it's got some decent stuff on there, but it's never the one thing that I, if you're home at night and you're like, oh, let's throw something on it. I never go directly to Amazon Prime. It's always, oh, let's see what's on HBO or let's see what's on Hulu or, stuff like that. So anyway, what I was saying is this is like, yeah, the money that I was spending on Netflix will go to HBO, and the money that I was spending on the WWE Network is actually going towards an independent wrestling streaming platform called High Spots.
Okay.
That I think you and I've talked about before off air, where it's a bunch of the old independent, wrestling content and stuff, where a lot of my favorite wrestlers who were in, the WWE or whatever were to begin with. And so it's just cool to see them like actually get to do stuff with the handcuffs off instead of, trying to placate a 80-year-old man.
Yeah, that's the reasonable version of the approach to being a pro wrestling fan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, Vampires Versus the Bronx. If it's good, then I'll let you know. And maybe we can figure out a way for you to watch it so we can review it. And if it's not, then, hey, you didn't have to watch it, and and I'll take one for the team.
Well, thanks, buddy. Can I ask, does it look like it's going to be more comedic?
Yeah, it looks like it is kind of in that like preteen, kid kind of trope. But it also looks, it also looks decent. Like, you'll see some trailers, you're like, oh, I'm never going to watch that. But I thought, oh yeah, for like a made for Netflix type thing, this looks decent, and it kind of hits all the stuff I'm interested in. And we always talk about how there's not enough good vampire stuff out there, so maybe this is one of those things that'll stick around for years to come.
For sure. Okay. Well, good deal. I'm completely unaware of this one as well before you mention it, and this is the second one that you've brought up today that I think I'm definitely going to watch. So appreciate you, man. You're doing good work.
Yeah. Hey, man. That's my pleasure. It's what I'm here for. That's what we do on everyone's favorite part of the show.
Jeff hates trailers.
The world's still trying to open back up. Sometimes there's not any horror to report.
I mean, I think that's the case this week. Sometimes I feel like there's a flood, and then sometimes there's not even a trickle. So there is a new animated Creepshow coming to Shudder, but that seems like enough conversation about the topic. And yeah. So no further discussion here.
Yeah. If you're a Teen Titans fan, Alex Brightman will be voicing Beetlejuice on an episode of Teen Titans sometime this week.
That's super cool.
Yeah. So Alex Brightman is the gentleman who played Beetlejuice on Broadway.
I am a Teen Titans fan.
So there you go. There's horror reporter news. See? Came through anyway.
Yeah, man. You're pulling double duty. We're going to have to increase your salary.
I'd appreciate it. I still haven't got that PlayStation yet. So
we got to get on that. Let me talk to marketing, see what the budget is. Maybe we can get a sponsor.
Yeah. Hey, man, my birthday's next week, so.
Get this done.
Yeah. Get these hands. It's crazy that you said, sometimes it's a trickle, sometimes it's a flood. Well, here's the thing, man. 2020 in itself is just a horror reporter. I feel like that's just all we have.
We could just turn Horror Reporter into like open Twitter, check trending, read topics.
Yeah. Done. 100%, man. It's nuts. But obviously you didn't come here to listen to Jeff and I talk about current events. You came to listen to us talk about a movie or podcast or documentary or whatever we're doing today. So you ready to ring the bell, my man?
I mean, I think so. This is basically the end of all levity and good things in this podcast. It's all dark from here, but I think I'm up for it.
All right. Let's go to a dark place. Let's pull the string on Dark Side of the Ring, the Benoit documentary. Hey, you know what the good news is we don't have to call in Wahlberg for this because there's really no spoilers.
Yeah, I hate to chuckle at any part of this story, but yeah, I think that's fair. Mark, he could use a week off.
Yeah, and that just puts more money in the budget for my PlayStation.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
So, I have watched this documentary. You and I, we've mentioned it before here on the show. Obviously you and I are both big pro wrestling fans, me more so than you, I would imagine. And there's been some really great episodes of this documentary. There's been some that aren't as good. They've been a little disappointing. To me, this Benoit one was a must-see, and it's probably the one that I've watched the most, since it's been out. Actually, I think I bought them on Vudu before realizing that they were on Hulu. And I'm not upset about it. Like, for any reason, if I ever stop with Hulu, I'd want to have those two episodes.
That's an interesting take, Derek, just because this isn't just like the most horrific thing that has happened in an industry that is full of horrific things. But like it's particularly connected to your own fandom. You know what I mean? I don't think it's inappropriate or anything like that. It's just wild to me that you and I, you more than I, but wrestling fans in general are happy to go back and look at this. You know, when somebody says we're going to talk about Benoit, if it's on a podcast or a website or a documentary, wrestling fans of a particular age show right back up. And we know most of the beats and most of the details, and yet we're there for more of it. And I don't understand that phenomenon, even as someone who participates in it. I don't normally like to like drag myself through hurtful things, but I would also totally buy these episodes and watch them from time to time.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's just because as wild as the stories are in front of the camera, sometimes the stories behind the camera are the wildest in professional wrestling. And this is definitely one of them. Sure. I mean, this is the one, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this legitimately almost killed the professional wrestling business. Probably should have, if we're being real honest about it.
Yeah, man, it's bleak.
It is.
I will tell you that I think a strength of the Vice series, or the two Vice episodes on this topic, is that it did show me some good things that have survived. I don't want to say that came out of, but that survived it. So, you know, Chris Jericho just simply pursuing his career is in its own way a win.
Mm-hmm.
But then you see Benoit's surviving son, Nancy's sister, they meet. We get some indication that they can console each other. You see the way that, like, Chavo and Vicky and Chris, Jericho are there to kind of help each other through the difficult times. Like, there is a sort of triumph of the human spirit, and there can be healing, there can be a future that these episodes do a good job of putting in front of us.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we talked about how bleak this thing is and stuff, and I think the wonderful part about this was getting to see David Benoit and Nancy's sister, I think Sarah is her name.
That sounds right.
To be able to reunite. And, you know, it's been a while since that's happened. So it was good to see them be able to do that. Also, it was good to see David Benoit able to, like, go to wrestling and enjoy wrestling. Man, like, I don't know if I would be in that same position. I don't know that I could ever watch it ever again.
Yeah, I think that's a real possibility, particularly because I don't think wrestling fans have really figured out how to relate to the Chris Benoit footage that we, you know, grew up enjoying to consume, but now seeing it in completely different light. So, like, the guy who's the kid seems like that problem would be hyper strong by comparison. So I am glad that he's able to reconnect with a sport that meant a lot to his family before these ugly events.
Mm-hmm. So I guess we honestly probably just need to start at the beginning of this thing. For those of you that don't know, and I imagine that everyone knows just because it was such a national news story, but there was a 3-day period in 2007 from June 22nd to June 24th where Chris Benoit, who was regarded as one of the greatest professional wrestlers of all time. Up until this point, honestly, Jeff, was probably one of my top five favorite wrestlers ever. I never really got the respect that he probably deserved in the business. But anyway, I feel weird just saying that about him after when I have to follow up with the next sentence. But something inside of Chris Benoit snapped. And he wound up over a 3-day period. He wound up murdering his wife, Nancy, their son, Daniel, and then finally killing himself. So the record indicates that he killed Nancy on Friday, and then he murdered his son on Saturday, and then he wound up taking his own life on Sunday. At the time, there were a lot of speculations. There was a lot of conspiracy theories running around about this. A lot of things pointing to roid rage and steroids becoming a huge talking point in the world. There was a lot of talk about. I even heard this, and I don't know if you, I'm sure you have too, but at one point I heard there was a conspiracy theory that Kevin Sullivan, due to the fact that he did play a demonic character in the 80s, which to me is hilarious because a demonic character in the 80s was he wore eyeliner and spoke gibberish.
Yeah, we had characters in the 80s who played clowns. I don't expect to see them show up at a circus.
Right. But people have thought that just because Kevin Sullivan was synonymous with being a devil worshiper in his gimmick and his character, that he had actually put a hit out or had some kind of cult or something kill the Benoit family because Nancy was Kevin's ex-wife. There's just a lot of real dumb speculation about this. It turns out, and as the documentary goes on, you see this, you know, the biggest reason that they give for this is that Chris Benoit was suffering from CTE at a very alarming and high rate. Not too many years after this, Junior Seau, who was also suffering from CTE, who was a famous professional football player, he ended his life. And the documentary goes on to say that Benoit, his brain was like that of essentially of my grandmother's, you know, an 80-year-old person with dementia. So there's no telling what Benoit was seeing or hearing or facing at the time. I'm definitely not trying to make excuses for the man. I'm just trying to present the facts as they are.
Well, hey, can I interject there for just a second? So the theories I had heard, I heard the Sullivan thing. I'd heard the roid rage theory. This documentary seems to make a compelling case for the CTE issue. I'm sure you know about this, but I've heard hardcore Holly talk about how Chris was probably drinking more than he ever had. Mm-hmm. And the issue for me is that he killed Nancy, but then waited and drugged up his 7-year-old son before killing him.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to make a diagnosis on this, but my theory is basically that there was a perfect storm of factors that pushed Chris Benoit into a place that no human being should ever go. So the CTE probably is the biggest single factor. But if he's also on testosterone replacement theory, his body's been, his body chemistry's been affected by steroids or testosterone for a while, then he's also drinking. It seems like everything bad came together on a very sharp point in June of 2007.
Yes.
Does that sound reasonable?
Yes, absolutely. I think that there was some kind of domestic situation, maybe an argument that went too far. And I think that Chris snapped and killed Nancy. And then was terrified at the thought of, well, I mean, she's dead and now I'm going to jail. What's going to happen to Daniel? And the CTE took over, or maybe, I don't know what was going on in his head, but something took over in his brain that said, well, the best thing to do is to just take Daniel with you. I think that I think that there's a lot of factors that play into it.
And the thing this documentary really put on my radar that I think I learned for the first time from it. It's hard because, like I said, every time somebody connected to pro wrestling says we're going to talk about Benoit, I kind of run over there to listen. But this documentary put on the table that in the days before this, Benoit had become very paranoid and was thinking people were chasing him or following him. And he was trying to kind of mix up his daily pattern so that people couldn't track him and whatnot, which just sounds like a precipitous drop in mental stability. Now, is it, that's the old joke. It's not paranoia if somebody's really after you. And we've seen professional wrestlers get into all kinds of crazy stuff. But this far out from the events, it doesn't seem to be the case that Chris really had somebody he owed money chasing him, right? It's not like, what's that kid who died in Houston? Gino?
Oh, Gino Hernandez.
Yeah, or the Dino Bravo thing where we're like,
yeah,
they were involved with shady people. There's probably shady people involved here in their death. As a result, it just looks like Chris was literally brain damaged, was self-medicating with alcohol, and was also either under medical advisement or not, pumping his body full of testosterone, anabolic steroids from time to time. And it just took him to a place where the idea that taking your son with you after you murder your wife is the reasonable decision.
Yeah.
Which is,
I agree. I didn't mean to interrupt you there.
No, I was rambling.
I think also the biggest thing that this documentary shows me, and you tell me if I'm wrong on this or not, but I almost feel like that there was an intimacy between Benoit and Guerrero that borderlined lovers.
Oh my.
And I'm not saying that that happened. But like, Jeff, you are one of my best friends in the entire world. You have been for the last 25 years. And God forbid anything ever happened to you. But if it did, I'm not going to go to your house and lay on your side of the bed and cry holding your pillow.
That's a good point, brother. That's a good point.
I've had breakups where I've done stuff like that. you know, as an idiot teenager, or, you know, in my young 20s, thinking like, oh, this is the one, and I can't believe that she's gone. Like, I feel like that's happened before. But I wouldn't do that over a friend.
Yeah.
And so I just wonder, and it, maybe even if it was just on Benoit's side of the story, you know, Eddie seems like he's the more level-headed guy between the two. I mean, obviously now. But it really did make me wonder if there wasn't, again, I don't think there was anything physical going on or anything like that, but just this, there's just a lot of things, you know, that say like Eddie, when Eddie died, Chris was never the same. And, you know, talking about the crying on the side of the bed, and then, you know, Vicky would have to Eddie's widow is having to console Chris because Chris is on Eddie's bench in his weight room crying in hysterics over the fact that he misses Eddie Guerrero.
Yeah.
And I just wonder if the excess testosterone, the CTE, the drinking, and then the loss of this, for lack of a better term, soulmate, you know, and he makes the mistake, he gets, things get too crazy with Nancy, and then he's like, well, this is it. I'm going to go meet Eddie. I want to go be reunited with Eddie, and I got to take my kid with me.
Mm. Yeah, that's an interesting theory. And I think there, it's got some legs. I think there's versions of it that don't necessarily involve the romantic component. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think soulmate kind of gets at that idea that like there was an intimate connection between these guys that they shared uniquely between each other. And that can happen among really dear friends, right? I mean, particularly if you go back to previous eras, the way that people talked about their friends and the depth of feeling for their friends, we don't really have a category today for that depth of feeling apart from romantic intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
But then also these guys are basically on the road together much more with each other than they are their spouses or people they are related to or friends from a different context, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they become, I mean, their lives just become enmeshed. And then the other side of this is that Eddie and Chris both had substance abuse issues. Clearly, there mm-hmm. is such a thing as toxic codependency. And so I think your theory has legs from a lot of different angles. I don't know that we'll ultimately ever know which angle best explains it, but that just seems to have the ring of credibility to it.
Yeah. I knew that they were friends. I knew that they were best friends.
Sure.
But I never would have thought that it went to that extreme. It made me wonder if other people thought that way too. I've talked to Big Al, who I mentioned a lot on this because he's my best friend. And, you know, the first thing once we watched this documentary, I asked him, I said, what'd you think about it? And he said, well, the first thing that came out of my wife's mouth was, I think Benoit and Guerrero were lovers. And I went, what? That doesn't even sound right. And he's like, dude, watch it again. And so I did, because the first part of this documentary was on YouTube. You know, Vice made it public on YouTube so that, you know, I guess to, you know, spruce up the ratings for the second part of it. And so I went back and watched it again, and I was like, holy smokes, you know, there's something there. Again, I don't think that it got to like a physical level, but I do think that there was a lot of love there, maybe even unrequited for Benoit. You know, after Eddie passed away, he kind of took to Chavo. And I wonder if that just wasn't like a conduit, you know, in that situation.
Yeah. But like I said, I think the theory has legs, and it could be exactly that angle. It could be several other ones. If they're codependent, or at least Chris thinks, you know, of him as his dependent, your world would fall apart, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like we get these stories of like people tucking the other one into bed when they're blitzed out of their mind on some kind of substance or alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, one of the things that stood out watching the documentary this time is how Eddie and Chris are a two-man friendship within a three-man friendship, right? So like Chris Jericho is this third party who's very good friends with both of them, obviously cares very deeply for them, and they care deeply for him as well.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also clearly the third most central figure. You know what I mean?
Like those two. I would actually disagree with that. I'd say Dean Malenko is the third, and then Jericho would be the fourth.
Okay. Well, I'm totally going to defer to you on that. The thing that struck me was Chris had kind of a bigger life You know, Chris had music interests. He's clearly been able to spin off into an excellent podcast host. I just wonder if Eddie and Chris, and I'm sure you can tell me if Dean is the same way too, but what came through is that Eddie and Chris were the most obsessed about being the best professional wrestlers ever. Mm-hmm. And Jericho clearly is one of the best ever, but he also has other interests that he's very good at. And it made me wonder if just the smallness of the focus of their life, and particularly how much time they were forced into being around each other, sort of fed this thing you're talking about. You know, there's a story specifically early in episode one where Chris Jericho talks about, I'm going to take some time off because my kids got a birthday or whatever it is. And he says Benoit just doesn't have a category for taking days off. He wants to be at his kid's stuff. He wants to be at holidays, but he can't imagine the thought of not working dates he's scheduled for or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it made me think like, this is toxic and dangerous long before we ever got to June 2007. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, this is armchair psychology. I get it, but you want to know what went wrong so that nobody else ever experiences it again. You know what I mean?
Yeah. 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 I think you're right. I think that they were so, I think Benoit more than Guerrero was so singularly focused on being the absolute best ever. You know, there's a story that I've always, you know, Jericho brings it up in this documentary, but he also brought it up in one of his books. And by the way, I'm writing a blog right now about Chris Jericho that'll be out by the end of the week. You can find it on DerekZoo.com. There's a good plug.
Sweet.
I think you'll enjoy it. But anyway, they talk about they're in Japan, they're wrestling. Jericho does a spin kick. It doesn't connect. It's a little, you know, it's there's a bigger gap than normal because obviously you're not trying to. We all know that wrestling is entertainment. We all know that these guys aren't trying, most of the time, aren't trying to hurt each other, that it's all part of the show. But Jericho said that there may have been a little more gap than normal. Benoit took a bump off of it and then was mad at himself because he, quote unquote, exposed the business. So then he went backstage and did 500 hack squats. And Jericho just decided he was going to do them right beside him. But no one told him to do it. No one said, you know, way to go, a-hole. You screwed the entire business. Benoit felt like that's what he had to do to purge himself of the fallacy that he had committed. And I've never heard of anybody doing anything like that, you know?
Yeah.
And I like to think of myself, as dorky as it may be, as a pretty big wrestling fan and kind of know the stories, the ins and outs. There's not much anymore about the business that shocks me or that I don't know, but I've never heard of anybody else doing anything like that. And so maybe that's what it was, man. Maybe that there's just a lot to it. There's a lot of layers. There's a lot to unpack. And, you know, obviously, unfortunately, we don't have enough time to really get into it. Out of the two episodes, what stood out to you the most in this thing? You know, I think you and I both kind of exhausted ourselves on reading articles about Benoit. You know, you said it earlier, anytime you hear Benoit being brought up in the discussion, it's something that you want to listen to. Was there anything that you didn't know, you know, that you found out about this tragedy after watching this thing, or anything that really stood out to you about it?
Yeah, well, two things. And if you'll just bear with me for a second on it, I think it actually connects to the horror element that's in this story. You know, this is a true crime story and it's horrific. One of the things I didn't know much about was just who Nancy was as a person. I remember her as being, you know, the hot girl in this match that would be followed up by another hot girl in a different match. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The episodes do a really good job of humanizing her and fleshing out my understanding of her. And dude, out of everything that happens, you know, I think the most tragic figure here who has the least amount of agency is Daniel Benoit. Mm-hmm. But that Nancy was married, abused by her first husband, divorces, thinks she's found true love with Kevin Sullivan. And I get there's some discrepancy here, but there's an allegation pretty sharply in the documentary that Sullivan abused her as well. Mm-hmm. And that devolves and she's with Benoit, who, you know, that they say multiple times, never saw her more in love, all this stuff. And they look so happy in those clips. I know she filed for divorce over domestic abuse in 2003 and withdrew it. But you just got to assume that physicality that was radically inappropriate had become part of this relationship as well.
Mm-hmm.
And she, as a result, is one of the most heartbreaking figures in all of wrestling to me. A woman who wanted to love and be loved, mm-hmm. continually finding herself with men who abused her is just soul crushing. And I've got another one after that, but any thoughts on that point?
I mean, dude, you're absolutely right. It's one of the things that I think I took more to heart on this viewing of the podcast or of the documentary than I have in the other ones, is just how tragic of a figure that Nancy Sullivan winds up being, where, you know, usually when we review horror movies, there's a final girl, there's the survivor, there's mm-hmm. the happily ever after. You know, of course there's a lot of times where we don't get that, but there's usually somebody, there's usually the final girl, the survivor. And never in my life have I wanted a survivor girl more than I would have wanted Nancy Sullivan to be that, or Nancy Benoit to be that.
Yeah, that's really well said.
And it sucks that she constantly put her heart out there and constantly had it broken. And then just, unfortunately, I can't even say she fell for the wrong guy. Just she was at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah, I mean, the guy she fell for is not the one who did what took her life, you know?
Right, right.
He became something. That's sort of the subset of my second point. That so for me, I knew Benoit largely in WCW, where he was kept on, I wouldn't say the margins, but kind of the mid-card.
Mm-hmm.
They get into that in the documentary. And really and truly, Benoit to me in WCW was not an interesting character.
Mm-hmm.
I was much more interested in the razzle dazzle with Goldberg or Sting, or you know what I mean? Like
mm-hmm.
that was much more my thing. Now we have a mutual friend of the podcast as well, named Jared Moore, who I think for a while in high school thought he was Chris Benoit in terms of, you know, being the killer Wolverine.
Yeah.
And so my buddy who I hung out with a lot, and we played WCW versus NWO, he used Chris Benoit. Like I clearly was kind of I was in the minority position of not being super interested in Chris Benoit. Well, then I check out and I don't really see a whole bunch of the WWE stuff because I wasn't watching wrestling at the time that Benoit had his moment in the sun. And so it was interesting to me that this movie this documentary helped me get a sense of what we lost with Chris Benoit. First to CTE and the consequences of choices that he made about what to do with his body long before we lost Chris Benoit as a murderer of his family.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a guy who loved his craft, gave himself to it, literally, in a way that probably cost him and his loved ones their lives. The other thing that stood out on this theme is that you can tell something dark came over Chris Benoit, in that the people who are friends with him legitimately love him and are like in a really tough spot to say, I'm telling you, this was a good guy.
Yeah.
And I can't reconcile the two Chris's. But then when you get to his son has no reservations about saying, my dad was an incredible dad. I mm-hmm. looked up to my dad. I wanted to be a tag team champion with my little brother, like my dad. Like, people who are scumbags over the course of their life don't leave that kind of wreckage behind them with people who legitimately love them and can't reconcile what the person did, you know, in the darkest moments of their life. I'm not saying any of that to absolve Chris Benoit. I'm just saying I got to know him better. And I realized we lost Chris Benoit before we lost Chris Benoit and his family.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%, man. It's, and I guess it's one of those things that it's allowed me to be able to separate the Chris Benoit that I grew up as a huge fan of and the Chris Benoit that did what he did to his family. It still kind of makes my stomach churn when I see him on like an old Nitro or an old WWF pay-per-view or something. I don't think that I've deliberately went out of my way to watch like one of his matches, which sucks, man, because Benoit had some of the best, you know, like I think this is the biggest, this isn't the biggest tragedy in the whole thing, but it is a tragedy for someone who dedicated their entire life to professional wrestling to now be expunged from it because of the horrific and psychotic things that he did in the last 72 hours of his life. is truly tragic, because Benoit did everything for the wrestling business. He wanted to be everything to the wrestling business, and he wound up almost killing the wrestling business.
Yeah, that's a really twisted irony that I think may, you know, in future days, some advanced civilization will almost see it as a legend of our culture, you know, that that something could go so wrong on that exact point. I'll just lay it out there, man. Watching the documentary made me want to watch some Chris Benoit matches that I missed. The thing that stood out on that front for me, and you can speak to this much better than I can, but the kind of snap he put on his power bomb as a dude who's not big, he's not tall. So the length of travel for that power bomb isn't what you would see from like Kevin Nash or whatever.
Right.
Now he looked like a human muscle, but he found a way to make his stature not a problem.
Right.
To present himself as a threat, no matter what the opponent looked like. And there were several pictures of him snapping dudes into the mat on a powerbomb. And I thought, like, it looks like he's driving them through the mat.
Yeah.
And again, it made me want to go back and watch Benoit. I know it's just a weird deal. It's a weird deal to know what to do with Chris Benoit. Mm-hmm. But I'll put it on the record that I wanted to go watch some Chris Benoit matches.
Yeah. Well, one of the reasons why I became such a fan of Benoit was because in a business at the time that was surrounded with Hulk Hogan and the Dungeon of Doom and a bunch of cartoon characters, Benoit made it feel real.
Sure.
You know, he was doing snap suplexes that I'd never seen before. And you know, he was, I mean, that freaking headbutt, man, it's no joke. But, you know, I loved it as a kid.
And that's the one that's the hardest to watch now. Like,
yeah,
every time they showed him doing a diving headbutt, I just thought, oh my gosh, this is writing a death certificate for multiple people.
Yeah.
And I don't want to also deny agency to him. I mean, he made the choice to do the thing. I was a sports nut in the 90s. Mm-hmm. I knew how, like, the University of Tennessee Lady Vols were retraining their girls, their women, on how to jump because they thought that landing was what was causing so many women to tear their ACLs. Like, I knew intimate science details about athletics, and I had never heard the term CTE.
Yeah.
It was a monster that was lurking entirely unseen, just waiting to pounce. And now that you know it, you just, it just crawls all over you to see it happen.
Yeah. It's horrific, you know, but I remember doing that move to like my Macho Man Randy Savage wrestling buddy.
Sure.
On my bed, you know, like I'd climb up on my bed and I'd act like I was on the top rope and I'd jump off and do that headbutt. But I mean, you know, that's doing it to essentially a pillow. It's not doing it to a 245 pound man and then also hitting, you know, 2x4s, a plywood or whatever it's plywood under the mat. I know that much. I don't know the exact measurements and stuff, but it's just, it's crazy. And to see so many people say, oh, it's fake, or, oh, it's, you know, they know how to land, or, oh, those rings bounce. Well, as somebody who's trained to be a pro wrestler, those things aren't, it's not a trampoline, man.
Yeah.
You know, there's a reason I don't do it now is because that mess hurts.
Sure.
And so I just can't imagine having to do that, especially at that time where you're on the road 300 days a year. It's just, it adds up. And you wonder why we lose. Well, I mean, my God, we lost Animal last week. Road Warrior Animal.
Yeah.
Passed away at 60 years old of natural causes. What 60-year-old man died? Like, what 60-year-old man dies of natural causes nowadays?
Who was like a bodybuilder and workout freak, you know? Yeah, dude, you add into that it was just not normal to take chair shots to the head.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, it feels like watching people play Russian roulette now. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I know Daniel Bryan has been sort of maybe the last version of this where we worry about, gosh, did he take too many shots to the head? But it redefines an entire era of wrestling. Like, I'm thinking about The Rock, when Mankind had his hands in handcuffs and Rock just drills him over and over with that chair. At the time, I thought it was kabuki. Mm-hmm. And now I'm like, oh my gosh, his brain is going to wither.
Yeah.
I know everyone grows over the course of their life to see things in their past in a new light, but this is like realizing you were cheering for a serial killer. Not intentionally. These guys weren't intending to hurt each other in this long-term way we're talking about. But nonetheless, it looks like somebody just hacking their way through a suburban neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's when I was in the late 90s, when I was, you know, a teenager, early teenager, 12, 13, 14 years old, I think that probably ECW was my favorite wrestling promotion just because it felt underground and not as like glitzy and glamoury. And, you know, and obviously, if I'm being honest, because, you know, they had chicks and thongs and, you know, way before the WWE did. But one of the biggest things was like the violence of that promotion. And I go back and try to watch some ECW stuff now, and it almost makes you want to vomit because those guys weren't putting their hands up to protect themselves from chair shots. They were just taking, you know, I mean, Jericho even talks about it on the documentary where you grit your teeth, you stiffen up your delts, and you just take it full-fledged in the face. I think the worst chair shot I've ever seen, and at the time I thought it was the coolest thing in the world, was The Rock brains Ken Shamrock. It's like February of 98, and Shamrock is on his knees, and he's like, "Mother effer, if you want some, let's do this." And I mean, Dwayne home run hits him in the face with a chair. And you just, I mean, I you know, now I shrivel. Like I can't watch it.
Yeah.
And it's horrifying to think that, you know, these guys were doing this stuff, not knowing the long-term lasting effects of it. You know, as a matter of fact, while we're recording this, I've got old WCW Thunder playing. And right now, Mike Awesome is wrestling Booker T, and Mike Awesome was the ECW champion. And he took those crazy chair shots to the head. He took those insane dives where he's diving. You know, this guy's 6'6", 6'7". He's diving over the top rope and landing on the concrete with his head because he's not being protected well enough. And, you know, we lost Mike Awesome because he committed suicide. And, you know, did depression come into, you know, did it play a factor? I'm sure it did. But did CTE also play a factor? I'm sure it did.
Yeah.
You know, and so thank God for Christopher Nowinski, a gentleman who, again, is interviewed in this documentary and is doing his best to try to help, you know, professional wrestlers and try to make sure that stuff like this isn't done anymore. And you know, the WWE has done its part to stay away from chair shots. There's every once in a while, there's the unprotected shot to the head. I remember Triple H hit The Undertaker with a steel chair at WrestleMania 27 in Atlanta because I was there, me and my buddy, Big Al, and then our other best friend, Scotty, the three of us were there, and he hit him with the chair, and we all three were like, oh, that wasn't supposed to happen, because we would just become acclimated to the point of like, that doesn't happen anymore. You know, Cody Rhodes got some flack last year because Sean Spears hit him with what they said was a gimmicked chair. But Sean Spears hit him and a part of the chair cut the back of Cody's head open. And he had like eight or 18 staples. He had to get put in the back of his head because, you know, they did something stupid. So it's slowly but surely coming along that, hey, maybe we shouldn't hit each other in the head with steel chairs anymore.
Yeah.
You know, luckily, especially right now, of course, with the way that the coronavirus is, you know, they can't go on the road. But, you know, thankfully nowadays, you know, wrestlers aren't on the road 300 days a year. So they're able to rest up. They're able to heal from injuries. They're able to, you know, they're able to take better care of themselves. So hopefully, we're seeing the end of these premature deaths from professional wrestlers.
Yeah. I know in the NFL, there's a concussion protocol and there's even like a concussion count, you know, that if you get a concussion, you have this much long, this many days that are mandatory to let your brain heal, because it seems like the science says when you get a concussion on top of a concussion is when it's really bad for CTE buildup.
Mm-hmm.
And at the very minimum, a thoughtful promotion is going to have to keep a database of when this guy last did something involving his head. We're not going to allow him to do that spot again for 6 months, even if there's not some kind of diagnosed medical, he had a concussion, whatever. Just if we're going to keep using the spots, they're going to become like basically someone bleeding or doing, you know, they're their highest of high spots, that this happens once a year, once every other year. This just isn't part of the regular routine. It signals something unique has happened. That seems like the minimum approach to this problem.
Yeah, I agree. I know we got to wrap things up, man. I could sit here and talk to you about this for the next 3 hours.
Yeah, I think this is a fertile field. And again, it's sort of this morbid one that's hard to justify.
Yeah. Well, I think it's also everyone wants answers.
Sure.
And I think that when you are so close to something, you know, like professional wrestling was to our childhoods, and still to, you know, I mean, my gosh, we had a pro wrestling podcast for a year and a half. So, you know, you and I still stay close to the business. I think it's something that you want to talk about and try to figure out. And obviously it's all open-ended questions. It's all open-ended answers. We're never going to figure out what's going on with this thing. But I just want to hit a couple more things real quick,
yeah,
and then we'll wrap up. Have you ever heard of the Wikipedia controversy about this?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. So I'm surprised that they didn't mention it in the documentary. Maybe they just didn't have enough time, but there was a statement regarding Nancy Benoit's death that was added to Chris Benoit's Wikipedia article around 14 hours before the Benoit family was discovered. And the article originally read, Chris Benoit was replaced by Johnny Nitro for the ECW World Championship at Vengeance, as Benoit was not there due to personal reasons stemming from the death of his wife, Nancy. Apparently, the stemming from the death of his wife, Nancy, was added at about 4:01 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And then the Fayette County Police reported that they discovered the bodies of the Benoit family around 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time. So it was about 10 and a half hours later. The IP address was located, was traced to Stamford, Connecticut, which obviously, you know, is the WWE headquarters. It hit mainstream media a lot. The gentleman or the poster, it was a gentleman. They seized all of his computer equipment. I don't think that he was ever like held in any kind of court or any kind of jail or anything like that. But the poster did say that his edit was a huge coincidence and nothing more. Which, why in the world would you ever put that on a Wikipedia page?
So you've jogged my memory. I have heard about this, and I am very much willing to believe conspiracies that somebody leaked that from WWE and whatnot. The problem is that WWE clearly didn't know what had happened by the time they put out the tribute to Benoit. So it's hard for me to believe somebody in the office was just scrambling for more time on how to spin it.
Right.
I mean, man, it's hard for me not to go to cancer smarks that somebody just wants to be the guy who said, called it.
Yeah.
And so they wildly speculate and guess at awful, awful things.
Yeah. Sandra is Nancy Benoit's sister. I forget what I called her earlier in the show, but I don't think I called her Sandra, but that's her name. She said in a July 2013 interview that she believes a blackout caused Benoit to murder her sister. She stated that the medical examiner who examined Benoit's body stated that he only had about 10 more months left to live due to an enlarged heart. I assume that that's from the extra testosterone. Sandra also states that Benoit was contemplating retiring and opening a wrestling school, but had decided to continue wrestling due to being in one of the main events at Vengeance for the ECW World Championship. And that's the crazy part about it is that the week or two before this happened, Benoit was drafted to the ECW brand. He was going to become the ECW champion and kind of be like a player coach type thing for the ECW brand. Not saying that that's a reason to not obviously do the horrific things that he did, but I know that there was a lot of talk about Benoit was upset because he was being pushed down the card, but yet he was about to become the face of the third brand of the company.
Mm.
And then for me, one of the craziest things is, I'm sure we've talked about this before. Have you ever watched the TV show The Shield that came on FX?
No, I didn't, but I know that Michael Chiklis and... Oh, what's his name? My boy, Boyd Crowder. They got their start there, right?
Walton Goggins.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, Michael Chiklis had a TV show called The Commish that was on several years before. But this is where he won his Emmy and like became somebody known for being more than like the fat, affable, bald guy. So anyway, the series finale of The Shield, Walton Goggins' character, Shane Vendrell, actually does this same murder-suicide deal with his wife and child and himself. And Sean Ryan, who created the Shield said that the inspiration for that was the Benoit suicide murder.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So just crazy how much that, you know, how it stems up.
Sure. For sure.
Anyway, man, I know we're running out of time. Anything else you want to talk about real quick before we, like I said, can't put a bow on it because there's enough meat on the bone to do 4 or 5 episodes on this thing. But anything you want to say before we end this one?
My final thought is, and this is arbitrary, but if I had a time machine, going back to prevent this is on the list. And I guess I just say that to say how, for someone who has no relationship to these people other than watching them play characters on a wrestling show, I'm a religious dude. There's a whole lot of religious stuff I'd go see with my time machine. There have been a whole lot of tragedies in history that you look at and you say, if somebody would have just kept that guy out of the house or kept that woman from going on that trip, everything would be fine. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I can't tell you which number, but in my top 20s, it would be somehow getting Nancy and David to go see her parents, or telling Chris, you're in a dark place. We're doing a wellness check. You and I both know there's crazy stuff happening in your head right now. You need to get out of here. You know, something. This is on the list. And I think that's the best way for me to capture that, man, this was significant for reasons that go beyond any kind of personal relationship. It's just too awful to not try to fix if you could.
Absolutely. For those of you that are interested, again, this is on Hulu right now. It's called Dark Side of the Ring. I just want to say special thanks to Evan Husney and Jason Eisner for creating this thing and being the guys behind it. If you want to hear more from their side of the spectrum, you can download Dark Side of the Podcast, which is a follow-up podcast that Evan and Jason do with our buddy Conrad Thompson. And I highly recommend listening to that. And if I know they did one on every episode of season 2, I highly recommend watching all of season 2. There's something crazy in every story. You know, you got Benoit, you've got one on New Jack. There's one on the Brawl for All, which is a crazy thing. There's one on Jimmy Snuka and how he supposedly murdered his girlfriend, Nancy Argentino. There's the Dino Bravo one we talked about. There's the Herb Abrams story, which is probably the craziest one out of all of them, even with this, you know, Benoit story. And they ended their season with Owen Hart, which is another tragic story about another fantastic wrestler that never got his due. But I highly recommend watching all of them, even if you're not a professional wrestling fan. I think that there's something in it that is incredibly interesting just about the human psyche and the human condition. And then go listen to those podcasts as well. I mean, I guess we got to do it, man. Did we see something scary?
Without a question. Just straight up real time terror. It's awful.
I agree. On a scale of 1 to 10, where would you put this?
Well, I'm a documentary fan. A true crime fan. I've watched a lot of dark stuff in my time as a result. Setting aside just the unique way that I can't really always explain that the tragedy affected me, I'm going to put this up as like a 9. This whole series is really well done documentaries, but man, they knocked it out of the park with these two. Mm-hmm. It's compelling. It does a good job telling the story. It humanizes the people. It fills in the data and it shows you life after. I mean, it's hard to want more from a documentary.
Yeah. I agree. I would actually probably say 9.5 on this one in particular. But yeah, the entire documentary series, the first and second seasons are great. The Bruiser Brody story is a must for anybody, I think. Yeah. And so, again, highly recommend it. Both seasons are on Hulu and I recommend you guys listen to it. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Thank you for allowing Jeff and I to detour off the normal path to talk about something that is just equally as terrifying, but also something that he and I are both very much interested in. Go to the Facebook group. We saw something scary. Join it if you haven't already. Lots of fun stuff going on there. Patreon.com/scary podcast. Partner up with us. You Patreon peeps should be getting your bonus episode of I See You, which is the new Tales from the Crypt. No, I'm sorry. That's Helen Hunt. regardless, I See You is the movie for this month, and that's a fun, it's a fun review. If you like it when Jeff and I disagree, that's one of those episodes that you'll enjoy. And then, of course, go to Apple Podcasts, leave us those 5-star reviews so that more people can know about the podcast. He's at Right Jeff, I'm at Derek Zhu, and we are out of time. Guys, thank you so much for listening. We'll see you guys back here next week. But until then, stay away from clowns and sewers, blind men with turkey basters, and white people with teacups. Bye-bye, man.